Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Outline of Sanity is a nonfiction collection of essays by G.K. Chesterton, first assembled from pieces originally published in GKS Weekly in the mid-1920s. It belongs to the tradition of social and economic criticism rather than to academic economics, but it offers a coherent alternative vision centered on distributism. Chesterton argues that a healthy society depends on wider ownership of property, land, and productive tools, instead of allowing wealth and power to concentrate in a few hands. He writes against both capitalism and socialism, treating each as a system that can reduce ordinary people to dependency. The book is distinctive for combining moral argument, political theory, and sharp paradoxes about machines, markets, property, and modern industrial life. Its purpose is not only to criticize existing systems, but to defend a more human scale of work and ownership. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, distributism as Chesterton's alternative to capitalism and socialism. The central idea of the book is distributism, Chesterton's attempt to describe a social order in which property is broadly owned rather than concentrated. He rejects both capitalist and socialist models, but for different reasons. Capitalism is criticized because it tends to place productive power in the hands of a small class of owners, leaving most people dependent on wages. Socialism is criticized because it can replace private monopoly with public monopoly without restoring genuine freedom to ordinary households. Chesterton does not present distributism as a technical blueprint so much as a moral principle. A sane society should allow many people to own enough to act independently. That includes small businesses, family farms, and useful property. The book, therefore, uses economic analysis in service of an ethical claim about dignity, liberty, and social stability. What makes this argument unusual is that it refuses the usual left-right framework and instead measures systems by whether they preserve human agency. Secondly, the danger of concentrated wealth and the decline of small ownership. A major theme in the book is Chesterton's concern that modern industrial society pushes wealth upward and squeezes out smaller owners. He repeatedly contrasts large corporate power with the precarious position of small shopkeepers, artisans, and independent producers. This is not only an economic complaint, but also a social one. When ownership shrinks, responsibility and initiative shrink with it. Chesterton sees concentration as dangerous because it creates a class division in which many people must sell labor to survive while a few control the terms of work. He treats this development as both unnatural and unstable. The reasoning is important because he does not merely defend the poor as victims. He argues that ordinary ownership is beneficial for freedom, family life, and civic health. In his view, a society of many small proprietors is more resilient than one dominated by large capital aggregations. The book also suggests that monopolistic power can hollow out local communities by replacing personal exchange with impersonal systems of control. Thirdly, land, agriculture, and the ideal of widespread property. Chesterton gives special importance to land ownership and agriculture because they represent the clearest form of direct independence. The famous idea associated with the book, 3 acres and a cow, captures his desire for a peasant or smallholder society in which families can produce part of their own subsistence. He is not presenting agriculture as a nostalgic fantasy alone, but as a practical way to anchor ownership in real life rather than abstract finance. Land matters in his argument because it cannot be multiplied in the same way as paper wealth, and therefore exposes the limits of speculation and accumulation. By stressing land, Chesterton links economics to household autonomy, food security, and social continuity. The point is not that everyone should farm, but that broad access to productive property should prevent extreme dependency. This emphasis also allows him to criticize systems that turn citizens into tenants in their own country. The agricultural chapters therefore broaden the book from a theory of trade into a theory of rooted human life. Fourthly, machinery, mass production, and the problem of dehumanized labor. Another important line of argument concerns machinery and industrial production. Chesterton does not simply attack machines as such. Rather, he worries about what happens when machines are used to centralize power and reduce workers to replaceable parts of a system. In his account, so-called labor-saving technology can become labor-displacing technology when its main result is not leisure or independence, but greater control by owners. He is skeptical of the idea that efficiency alone is a sufficient social good. A factory system may produce more goods, but it may also diminish craftsmanship, local initiative, and the human meaning of work. The book's criticism of mass production is therefore tied to its larger moral philosophy. Material abundance is not enough if people lose contact with meaningful ownership and skill. Chesterton's language is often paradoxical, but the underlying concern is consistent. He wants economic arrangements that serve persons, not systems that treat persons as components in a machine-like order. Lastly, property, justice, and Chesterton's Moral Vision of Sanity. The title of the book points to Chesterton's deeper claim that economic questions are really questions of sanity, order, and moral realism. He believes society becomes distorted when it accepts narrow ideologies that ignore the full complexity of human life. Property, in this framework, is not merely a legal or financial arrangement. It is connected to justice because it gives people a sphere of responsibility and independence. Chesterton treats ownership as a safeguard against both state overreach and private domination. This makes the book more than a policy argument. It is a moral diagnosis of modern civilization, asking whether institutions reflect human nature or twist it. The essays often proceed by paradox and criticism, but the conclusion aims to tie the arguments together by showing that a sane society must preserve both liberty and social breadth. That is why the book remains relevant. It asks readers to judge economic systems not only by output or growth, but by whether they keep human beings whole, competent, and free. In conclusion, The Outline of Sanity will be most valuable for readers interested in political economy, Catholic social thought, distributism, and early 20th century critiques of industrial capitalism. It is especially useful for anyone trying to understand Chesterton's thought beyond his fiction, because it shows how he connects economics to morality, property, and human scale. Readers looking for a conventional economic treatise may find it too literary and polemical, but that is also what makes it distinctive. Chesterton does not write like a technician. He writes like a moral philosopher using satire, paradox, and common sense reasoning to expose what he sees as the distortions of modern economic life. Compared with similar books on capitalism or socialism, this one stands out because it refuses to treat wealth as the main measure of progress. Instead, it asks whether ordinary people can own enough to live independently and act responsibly. Its practical value lies in sharpening the reader's understanding of ownership, decentralization, and the social costs of concentration. Its intellectual value lies in offering a coherent alternative to the usual economic binaries. If you would like to support G.K. Chesterton, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.